From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it.
Malcolm X would have been 78 years old today. We will play his famous speech, The Ballot or the Bullet. But first, we'll be joined by the head of the Black Police Officers Association and the Reverend Al Sharpton to talk about what happened this weekend in Harlem. New York City Police Department raiding the home of a Harlem woman. She'd worked for the city for 30 years. They threw a stun grenade in the apartment. She died of a heart attack. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As many as 10,000 Shiite Muslims rallied peacefully in front of a Sunni mosque in Baghdad today to protest the U.S. occupation and installation of what they view as a U.S. puppet government. It's being called the largest anti-U.S. protest since the end of the invasion. This comes days after the United States have definitely put off plans for Iraqi self-rule by an Iraqi National Assembly. Paul Bremer, the new overseer in Iraq, announced Friday that the U.S. and British officials would remain in charge of Iraq in an indefinite period. At the same time, the U.S. and Britain are pushing the U.N. to lift economic sanctions against Iraq so that proceeds from oil sales could begin financing reconstruction. The Los Angeles Times is reporting hospital records from Baghdad indicate at least 1,700 civilians have died in the Iraqi capital during the U.S. invasion. Another 8,000 were missing, were injured. As many as 1,000 people are still missing. The Indonesian army has launched a massive attack on Aceh. Fighter jets bombed the Free Aceh Movement rebels and scores of troops began parachuting in. Some 25,000 Indonesian soldiers are in the region. Thousands more are moving in. The military says it's moved in 15 warships to the region. The Associated Press is reporting the attack is expected to be Indonesia's biggest military operation since it invaded East Timor in 1975. The U.S.-sponsored peace plan between Israel and Palestine took a series of blows in the hours and days following a meeting between Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and his Palestinian counterpart, Mahmoud Abbas. It was the first high-level talks between Israel and Palestinian leaders in 3 years. Sharon has called off a planned visit to Washington. Israel has sealed the borders of the West Bank and Gaza, barring Palestinians from entering Israel. And the isolation of Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat has intensified. Foreign diplomats and visiting politicians will now be barred from meeting with Israeli officials if they intend to meet with Arafat. Arafat has backed the international peace plan, but Israel's blaming him for the upsurge of violence. There have been a total of 5 suicide bombing attacks carried out by Palestinians over the last 3 days, including a simultaneous attack in Jerusalem that killed 9, including 3 bombers. Moroccan officials have arrested more than 30 suspects following a series of suicide bombings in Casablanca on Friday that killed 41 people and injured 100. The targets included a Jewish community center, a busy Spanish restaurant, social club, and the Belgian consulate. Morocco's interior minister said there were similarities between the bombings in Casablanca and Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, in which 34 people died on Tuesday. Officials say the suicide bombers were likely Moroccan, who lived in Casablanca's northern slums amid tin shacks and dirt sidewalks. The Washington Post is reporting Saudi authorities are investigating whether members of Saudi Arabia's National Guard illegally sold arms to Al-Qaeda operatives in the country prior to last week's bombings. U.S. and Saudi officials said weapons seized from a May 6th raid on an Al-Qaeda safe house were traced to National Guard stockpiles. Saudi officials say they've arrested four people linked to the Riyadh bombings. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reports U.S. officials now suspect a top Al-Qaeda operative helped organize the Saudi bombings. The Post reports Saif Adel is one of several top Al-Qaeda leaders who are believed to be in Iran. The same U.S. officials said Al-Qaeda now has two command centers, one along the Afghan-Pakistan border, the other in Iran. In the Philippines, as many as 60 people have been killed in a military attack on Muslim separatists in the southern region of Mindanao. Following the air attacks, ground forces moved in. The Philippine President Gloria Arroyo is scheduled to meet with President Bush at the White House later today. She is expected to seek further military aid in return for Philippine support of the invasion of Iraq. According to USA Today, Arroyo will become the 21st foreign leader to meet with Bush at the White House or his Crawford, Texas ranch. All 21 back the U.S. invasion of Iraq. No opponents of the war have been invited. The Security and Exchange Commission is expected to announce today that WorldCom has agreed to pay a $500 million fine to the victims of its $9 billion accounting scandal. USA Today reports it is the largest fine ever against a non-broker public company. The Los Angeles City Council is drafting a law that will require businesses seeking city contracts to disclose whether they profited from slavery. The law will not require reparations or bar the companies from doing business with Los Angeles. The Financial Times reports today that 34 international companies will be accused in a New York court today of supporting South Africa's former apartheid regime and allowing it to commit human rights abuses on a massive scale. The companies listed in the suit include Deutsche Bank, UBS, Credit Suisse, Barclays, and Citigroup. They're accused of financing and profiting from the apartheid regime by providing high-interest loans to the government, in some cases in direct violation of international sanctions. The daring rescue of Jessica Lynch is one of the memorable stories to come out of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. According to Central Command, U.S. Special Forces braved enemy fire and risked their lives to rescue the 19-year-old private trapped behind enemy lines. Several weeks ago, we spoke with Robert Lloyd Parry of the London Times, who first raised questions about how actually Private Jessica Lynch was rescued. Well, now the BBC has taken the story a step further. According to a BBC broadcast last night, the entire story was invented to buck up morale and support for the invasion as it got bogged down in the initial advance. According to the report, Lynch received no battle wounds and her rescuers endured no enemy fire. Several Iraqi doctors were interviewed for the report. They said Lynch's care was good considering the war that raged outside. The report alleged the American rescuers knew beforehand they would not come under fire, but staged a daring rescue operation anyway. Dr. Anmar Uday told the BBC the hospital staff were surprised by the helicopter assault. It was like a Hollywood film, he said. They cried, go, 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 with guns and blanks and the sounds of explosions. The assault was filmed by a U.S. military night vision camera, and military officials made an edited version of the film available to press within hours of the operation. U.S. Command spokesperson Brigadier General Vincent Brooks told reporters, quote, some brave souls put their lives on the line to make this happen. Loyal to a creed, they know they'll never leave a fallen comrade. We may never know Private Lynch's side of the story. The Pentagon says she suffers from amnesia and can't remember being captured, her stay in the Iraqi hospital, or her rescue. Thank you. Malcolm, Martin, and Mandela by Roy Campbell, Pyramid Trio, here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. It was 10 minutes past 6 on Friday morning. 57-year-old Alberta Spruill was in her sixth-floor Harlem apartment on West 143rd Street. As she did every day for the last 30 years, she was preparing to go to work at the Department of Citywide Administrative Services. Then her door was kicked in. A stun grenade rocked the apartment. Soon she was handcuffed to her chair. The 12 intruders rifled through her belongings. She complained of chest pains. Within 2 hours, she was dead of a heart attack. The intruders were not robbers, but officers of the New York Police Department who targeted her apartment as part of its so-called war on drugs. A court had granted the police a no-knock warrant. It turns out the police raided the wrong apartment. We're joined right now by Lieutenant Eric Adams. He's founder and president of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Well, there's been a lot of activity this weekend after what happened on Friday. Can you describe what you know at this point?
Well, all things are still currently under investigation, and the police department has been very reluctant in turning over detail of findings of what happened. What we do know is that it appears as though the wrong apartment was targeted based on information that came from what's known as a confidential informant. And based on that wrong apartment, the 57-year-old woman was killed or died as a result of what appears to be stemming from that that intrusion.
How could it be that the police would simply use one informant who, it turns out, it looks like they were about, as you said, to drop him from the confidential informant list because he had given wrong information in the past, that they would use this informant to target the apartment without ever monitoring it themselves?
And those are the questions that this event is forcing the police department to address. But if we would go back to during the month of October, Norman Siegel and I held a press conference announcing a lawsuit because of similar cases that involved a retired police officer and his wife, who was a retired correction officer. And in addition, there was another family where there were two children and the parent that was also went through a similar incident. And at that time, we stated that the police department must enact some much-needed changes to prevent someone from losing their life based on these form of encounters. The police department did not institute any citywide changes. They stipulated that they put out a memo or did research. That was not put out department-wide, as it should have been. And it is based on that they did not heed the warning. They played Russian roulette with the safety of New York City residents, particularly those in Black and Hispanic communities. We have yet to date to see the numbers that tell us out of the 85 times the grenade was used, which community they were used in, how often we do no-knock warrants. All of these questions must come to the surface.
We're talking to Lieutenant Eric Adams, founder and president of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care. We're also joined on the line by the Reverend Al Sharpton. There's a piece in Newsday today by Leonard Levitt. It says, Alberta Spruill, who died of a heart attack after cops set off a flash grenade during a drug and gun raid on her Harlem apartment, is the fifth person since the fall to be caught in a wrongful no-knock raid. All are Black. Reverend Sharpton, can you talk about what happened?
Well, I think, first of all, it is an outrage. I think it really shows that people are literally living under siege. And we are talking about protecting people around the world from state siege. And we are clearly seeing that it is not only possible, but occurring with increased frequency right in the city of New York. I think what Lieutenant Adams and 100 Blacks and law enforcement has done this weekend has to be applauded, because they're doing this at great risk to their jobs and their careers. But clearly, others are not speaking out. The mayor and police commissioner cannot get away with an administrative report and an apology. We got that on Diallo. Wrong person. We're sorry. 41 bullets. Now we have 5 incidents, the last of which, Ms. Spruill. Oh, wrong person. We're sorry. No, what is sorry is the policies. What is sorry is what is the mechanisms that are put in place to make this happen. What is sorry is we're driven by a whole atmosphere of suspend civil liberties, suspend civil rights in the pursuit of alleged drugs, even if you sweep up innocent people. The Rockefeller drug laws helps to drive that. So I think we've got to really deal with this. I think we've all got to come together and press this administration. They said that they were different than Giuliani. Well, we don't see that. We see better manners, same policy. I think Eric has been saying this a long time. A lot of us are saying, you know what? Eric's been right all along.
In this piece, it goes on to describe the different attacks on the homes, all of black New Yorkers. In addition to what has happened to Alberta Spruill, on October 15th, retired housing cop Richard Rogers and his wife Marie, a retired correction captain, both 62, were watching TV when cops broke down the door of their Queens home. Rogers grabbed his license gun, prepared to shoot what he thought was an intruder. Seeing the cops, he dropped his gun and dove to cover it with his body. On October 22nd, police broke down the Queens door of Michael Thompson, a licensed private nurse, and put a gun to his head. Same story. And then it talks about Willamae Mack in Brooklyn in September. Police broke down her door with an explosive device. She was asleep with her twin 13-year-old sons. One boy hid under the bed. Police pulled him out and put a gun to his head. No drugs or weapons were found. Now, the police commissioner, Kelly, says they're sorry about what happened to Alberta Spruill, and they will suspend the use of stun grenades. Your response, Reverend Sharpton, and then Lieutenant Eric Adams.
I think we may have lost Reverend Sharpton.
Lieutenant Eric Adams.
Well, I think that of the most horrific aspect of this entire incident is that to continue a policy that you have a history that there are errors involved in. Now, to remove the grenades, to remove the no-knock clause, and to ceremonially or to cosmetic change something is not what we're looking for. No matter what tools are used, if they're not used correctly, then they will fail us. Many of these tools, such as no-knock warrants, are successful tools for going after those who participate in illegal behavior. The question is, are we using them correctly? Are we conducting the necessary surveillances? Are we looking at the existing laws that state when you use a confidential informant, how you're supposed to use the confidential informant? What has taken place in this CompStat-generated form of policing is that we have put expediency ahead of safety. And we cannot downplay what Reverend Sharpton just stated. If only way evil could exist if good people stand by and allow it to happen. It shouldn't only be 100 Blacks or Reverend Sharpton or the National Action Network. All of us must be outraged of an innocent 57-year-old woman who was inside her home all of a sudden being disturbed in such a violent fashion. And this is not a unique case. There have been several law enforcement officers, because we live in Brownsville, Bed-Stuy, Harlem. While off duty, several law enforcement officers had to undergo the same form of action, and it's amazing that there haven't been shootouts between off-duty law enforcement officers and the police department.
Lieutenant Eric Adams, I'm wondering if you've seen the large billboard on display in New York that says, "We support our troops," I think it says something like, "abroad and at home." And it shows a soldier, like we see a U.S. soldier in Iraq. And then it shows an even more heavily armed police officer. And that, I guess, is our troops at home. What is your response to that?
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because that's an important aspect that we must understand. There's several components to carrying out a warrant execution. And those officers who are part of the emergency service unit that carries out the execution of the warrant, they're following intelligence information that's given to them. They're no different than an artillery soldier or field soldier that's following intelligence information or procedures they give to them. So you can't make them the scapegoat of a failed policy that starts from the top. The top can't look at the actions of the field soldier and try to remove themselves from that action. Supporting the troops at home and abroad means, one, giving them the proper procedures to carry their jobs, to ensure public safety. Two, give them the proper equipment. And three, more important, is to ensure that they're put in an environment that they're able to do their job, not for the need of quantity, but quality. And when you search arrest and crime fighting based on quantity, then you're no longer concerned with the little details that's important to ensure an innocent person is not injured or killed or apprehended. And we have moved away from that during this form of policing in the city and in this country.
Hmm. Well, Lieutenant Eric Adams, I want to thank you for being with us, founder and president of 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care, before that Reverend Al Sharpton, founder of the National Action Network and 2004 Democratic presidential candidate. That does it for this conversation. But after the break, we move to Malcolm X. Today would have been his 78th birthday. We'll hear his Ballot or the Bullet speech. Stay with us.
Brown shades of my skin, only add color to my tears. Oh, oh, that splash against my hollow bones, that rocks my soul. Oh, oh, oh. Looking back over my false dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dreams never came true. Is it because I'm black? Somebody tell me, what can I do? Oh, Lord. Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Yeah.
You are listening to Democracy Now! Is it because I'm black? Sal Johnson here on the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On this day, 1925, Malcolm X was born. He would have been 78 years old today. Malcolm X would have had something to say about Alberta Sproul's death. It was his response to police brutality that first brought the Nation of Islam to the public eye. On April 4th, 1958, New York police beat two black Muslims. Johnson X received a savage blow to the head and was taken to the police precinct. Within an hour, dozens of young black Muslims arrived outside the precinct in neat formation. Malcolm asked to see Johnson X. Police said that Johnson X wasn't there. Then they admitted he was there, but said that Malcolm could not see him. Malcolm pointed to the rows of black Muslims outside who'd been joined by a large number of residents. He said the men would remain outside the precinct until they could be reassured that their brother had received medical attention. Police relented. And on Malcolm's instruction, Hinton was moved to Harlem Hospital. Only then did Malcolm order the Muslims to disperse. The police captain said, quote, "No man should have this much power over that many people. We cannot control this town of one man if one man can wield that kind of power." Later, commentators said Malcolm was the only black man in America, quote, "who could stop a race riot or start one." Malcolm X was born Malcolm Little on May 19, 1925, in Omaha, Nebraska. His mother, Louise Norton Little, raised the family's eight children. His father, Earl Little, was an outspoken Baptist minister, avid supporter of Marcus Garvey, the black nationalist who supported the Back to the Land movement, Back to Africa movement. His father was targeted by the Ku Klux Klan and met a brutal death. Malcolm excelled in school and graduated from junior high at the top of his class, but he lost interest in school when his favorite teacher told him his idea of becoming a lawyer was, quote, "no realistic goal for a nigger." He dropped out, eventually wound up in Harlem, New York. He became a drug dealer and a thief. At the age of 20, he was caught and sentenced to several years in prison for robbery. In prison, Malcolm renewed his studies, found the teachings of Elijah Muhammad, the leader of the Nation of Islam. When he got out of prison, he converted to Islam, changed his name. He considered Little a slave name and chose the surname X to symbolize his lost African name. Malcolm was appointed a minister and national spokesperson for the Nation of Islam. He established new mosques in Detroit, Harlem, and other cities, largely credited with increasing the Nation of Islam's membership from 500 in 1952 to 30,000 in 1963. As Malcolm X's fame began to supersede Elijah Muhammad's, tensions grew within the Nation of Islam. FBI agents infiltrated the organization. Shortly after learning Elijah Muhammad was betraying his own teachings and in having affairs with a number of women, Malcolm X split with the Nation of Islam and founded the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Malcolm X was shot to death on February 21st, 1965, in the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem, New York, by black Muslims. Many believe the FBI helped to foment the tensions between Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam. We're going to turn now to one of Malcolm X's most famous speeches, given about a year before he died, called The Ballot or the Bullet.
America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What is 20th? What do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite. They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. Looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet. Why does it look like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet? Because Negroes have listened to the trickery and the lies and the false promises of the white man now for too long. And they're fed up. They've become disenchanted. They've become disillusioned. They've become dissatisfied. And all of this has built up frustrations in the black community that makes the black community throughout America today more explosive than all of the atomic bombs the Russians can ever invent. Whenever you got a racial powder keg sitting in your lap, you're in more trouble than if you had an atomic powder keg sitting in your lap. When a racial powder keg goes off, it doesn't care who, it knocks out the way. Understand this, it's dangerous. Because what can the white man use now to fool us? After he put down that march on Washington, and you see all through that now, he tricked you, had you marching down to Washington. Yes, had you marching back and forth between the feet of a dead man named Lincoln and another dead man named George Washington, singing, "We Shall Overcome." He made a chump out of you. He made a fool out of you. He made you think you were going somewhere and you end up going nowhere but between Lincoln and Washington. So today our people are disillusioned. They've become disenchanted. They've become dissatisfied. And in their frustration, they want action. You'll see this young black man, this new generation, asking for the ballot or the bullet. That old Uncle Tom action is outdated. The young generation don't want to hear anything about the odds are against us. What do we care about odds? When this country here was first being founded, there were 13 colonies. The whites were colonized. They were fed up with this taxation without representation. So some of them stood up and said, liberty or death. Though I went to a white school over here in Mason, Michigan. The white man made the mistake of letting me read his history books. He made the mistake of teaching me that Patrick Henry was a patriot and George Washington wasn't nothing nonviolent about old Pat or George Washington. Liberty or death was what brought about the freedom of whites in this country from the English. They didn't care about the arts. Why, they faced the wrath of the entire British Empire. And in those days, they used to say that the British Empire was so vast and so powerful when the sun would never set on it. This is how big it was. Yet these 13 little scrawny states, tired of taxation without representation, tired of being exploited and oppressed and degraded, told that big British Empire, liberty or death. And here you have 22 million Afro-American black people today catching more hell than Patrick Henry ever saw. And I'm here to tell you, in case you don't know it, that you got a new generation of black people in this country who don't care anything whatsoever about us. They don't want to hear you, old Uncle Tom, handkerchief heads, talking about the us. No. This is a new generation. If they're going to draft these young black men and send them over to Korea or South Vietnam to face 800 million Chinese. If you're not afraid of those odds, you shouldn't be afraid of these odds. Why does this loom to be such an explosive political year? Because this is the year of politics. This is the year when all of the white politicians are going to come into the Negro community. You never see them until election time. You can't blame them until election time. They're going to come in with false promises. And as they make these false promises, they're going to feed our frustrations. And this will only serve to make matters worse. I'm no politician. I'm not even a student of politics. I'm not a Republican, nor a Democrat, nor an American, and got sense enough to know it. I'm one of the 22 million black victims of the Democrats. One of the 22 million black victims of the Republicans, and one of the 22 million black victims of Americanism. And when I speak, I don't speak as a Democrat or a Republican. I speak as a victim of America's so-called democracy. You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy. When we open our eyes today and look around America, we see America not through the eyes of someone who has enjoyed the fruits of Americanism. We see America through the eyes of someone who has been the victim of Americanism. We don't see any American dream. We've experienced only the American nightmare. We haven't benefited from America's democracy. We've only suffered from America's hypocrisy. And the generation that's coming up now can see it and are not afraid to say it. If you go to jail, so what? If you're black, you were born in jail. If you're black, you were born in jail. in the North as well as the South. Stop talking about the South. Long as you're south of the, long as you're south of the Canadian border, you're South. Don't call Governor Wallace a Dixie governor. Romney is a Dixie governor. Million black victims of Americanism are waking up, and they're gaining a new political consciousness, becoming politically mature. And as they become develop this political maturity, they're able to see the recent trends in these political elections. They see that the whites are so evenly divided that every time they vote, the race is so close they have to go back and count the votes all over again. And that which means that any block, any minority that has a block of votes that stick together is in a strategic position. Either way you go, that's who gets it. You're in a position to determine who go to the White House and who stay in the doghouse. You're the one who has that power. You can keep Johnson in Washington, D.C., or you can send him back to his Texas cotton patch. Who sent Kennedy to Washington. You're the one who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump. In Washington, D.C., in the House of Representatives, there are 257 who are Democrats. Only 177 are Republican. In the Senate, there are 67 Democrats. Only 33 are Republicans. The party that you bash controls two-thirds of the House of Representatives and the Senate, and still they can't keep their promise to you, because you're a chump. Anytime you throw your weight behind a political party that controls two-thirds of the government, and that party can't keep the promise that it made to you during election time, and you are dumb enough to walk around continuing to identify yourself with that party, you're not only a chump, but you're a traitor to your race. And what kind of alibi do they come up with? They try and pass the buck to the Dixiecrats. Now, back during the days when you were blind, deaf, and dumb, ignorant, politically immature, naturally you went along with that. But today, as your eyes come open and you develop political maturity, you're able to see and think for yourself. And you can see that a Dixiecrat is nothing but a Democrat in disguise. You look at the structure of the government that controls this country. It's controlled by 16 senatorial committees and 20 congressional committees. Of the 16 senatorial committees that run the government, 10 of them are in the hands of Southern segregationists. Of the 20 congressional committees that run the government, 12 of them are in the hands of Southern segregationists. And they're going to tell you and me that the South lost the war. Today are in the hands of a government of segregationists, racists, white supremacists, who belong to the Democratic Party but disguise themselves as Dixiecrats. A Dixiecrat is nothing but a Democrat. Whoever runs the Democrats is also the father of the Dixiecrats, and the father of all of them is sitting in the White House. I say it again. You got a president who's nothing but a Southern segregationist. From the state of Texas. They'll lynch you in Texas as quick as they'll lynch you in Mississippi. Only in Texas, they lynch you with a Texas accent. In Mississippi, they lynch you with a Mississippi accent. And the first thing the cracker does when he comes in power, he takes all the Negro leaders and invites them for a coffee. To show that he's all right. And invites them for a coffee. To show that he's all right. And those Uncle Toms can't pass up the coffee. They come away from the coffee table telling you and me that this man is all right. Because he's from the South. And since he's from the South, he can deal with the South. And look at the logic that they're using. What about Eastland? He's from the South. Make him the president. If Johnson is a good man because he's from Texas, and being from Texas will enable him to deal with the South, Eastland can deal with the South better than Johnson. You've been misled. You've been had. You've been took. I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago while the senators were filibustering, and I noticed in the back of the Senate a huge map. And on this map, it showed the distribution of Negroes in America. And surprisingly, the same senators that were involved in the filibuster were from the states where there were the most Negroes. Why were they filibustering the civil rights legislation? Because the civil rights legislation is supposed to guarantee voting rights to Negroes in those states. And those senators from those states know that if the Negroes in those states can vote, those senators are down the drain. The representatives of those states go down the drain. And in the Constitution of this country, it has a stipulation wherein whenever the rights, the voting rights of people in a certain district are violated, then the representative who's from that particular district, according to the Constitution, is supposed to be expelled from the Congress. Now, if this particular aspect of the Constitution was enforced, why, you wouldn't have a cracker in Washington, D.C. When you expel the Dixocrat, you're expelling the Democrat. When you destroy the power of the Dixocrat, you're destroying the power of the Democratic Party. So how in the world can the Democratic Party in the South actually side with you in sincerity when all of its power is based in the South? These Northern Democrats are in cahoots with the Southern Democrats. They plan a giant con game, a political con game. You know how it goes. One of them comes to you and make believe it for you. And he's in cahoots with the other one that's not for you. Why? Because neither one of them is for you. But they got to make you go with one of them or the other. So this is a con game. And this is what they've been doing with you and me all these years. First thing Johnson got off the plane when he became president, he asked, "Where's Dickie?" You know who Dickie is? Dickie is old Southern cracker Richard Russell. Look here. Yes. Lyndon D. Johnson's best friend is the one who is ahead, who's heading the forces that are filibustering civil rights legislation. You tell me, how in the hell is he going to be Johnson's best friend?
Malcolm X speaking in 1964, a year before he was assassinated, his Ballard or Bullet speech. We'll come back to it in a minute.
1989, the number, another summer. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting your heart, 'cause I know you got soul.
is that the rhyme designed to fill your mind. Now that you realize the prize arrives, we got the pump to start to make it tough.
Public Enemy, Fight the Power, here on Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report, as we return to Malcolm X and his Ballad of the Bullets speech from 1964.
Up here in the North, you have the same thing. The Democratic Party don't do it. They don't do it that way. They got a thing that they call gerrymandering. They maneuver you out of power. Even though you can vote, they fix it so you're voting for nobody. They got you going and coming. In the South, they're outright political wolves. In the North, they're political foxes. A fox and a wolf are both canine. Both belong to the dog family. Now, you take your choice. You're going to choose a northern dog or a southern dog. Because either dog you choose, I guarantee you, you'll still be in the doghouse. This is why I say it's the ballot or the bullet. It's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. America today finds herself in a unique situation. Historically, revolutions are bloody. Oh, yes, they are. They have never had a bloodless revolution or a nonviolent revolution. That don't happen even in Hollywood. You don't have a revolution in which you love your enemy. And you don't have a revolution in which you are begging the system of exploitation to integrate you into it. Revolutions overturn systems. Revolutions destroy systems. A revolution is bloody. But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in history in a position actually to become involved in a bloodless revolution. The Russian Revolution was bloody. Chinese Revolution was bloody. French Revolution was bloody. Cuban Revolution was bloody. And there was nothing more bloody than the American Revolution. But today, this country can become involved in a revolution that won't take bloodshed. All she's got to do is give the black man in this country everything he's doing. Everything. I hope that the white man can see this. Because if you don't see it, you're finished. If you don't see it, you're going to become involved in some action in which you don't have a chance. We don't care anything about your atomic bomb. It's useless. Because other countries have atomic bombs. When two or three different countries have atomic bombs, nobody can use it. So it means that the white man today is without a weapon. If you want some action, you got to come on down to Earth. And there's more black people on Earth than there are white people on Earth. I only got a couple more minutes. The white man can never win another war on the ground. His days of war victory, his days of ground victory are over. Can I prove it? Yes. Take all the action that's going on this earth right now that he's involved in. Tell me where he's winning. Nowhere. Why, some rice eaters ran him out of Korea. Yes, they ran him out of Korea. Race eaters with nothing but gym shoes and a rifle and a bowl of rice. Took him and his tanks and his napalm and all that other action he's supposed to have and ran him across the Yalu. Why? Because the day that he can win on the ground is past. Up in French Indochina, those little peasants, rice growers, took on the might of the French army and ran all the Frenchmen. You remember Dien Bien Phu? No. The same thing happened in Algeria, in Africa. They didn't have anything but a rifle. The French had all these highly mechanized instruments of warfare, but they put some guerrilla action on them. And a white man can't fight a guerrilla warfare. Guerrilla action takes heart, takes nerve, and he doesn't have that. He's brave when he's got tanks. He's brave when he's got planes. He's brave when he's got bombs. He's brave when he got a whole lot of company along with him. But you take that little man from Africa and Asia, turn him loose in the woods with a blade. That's all he needs. All he needs is a blade. And when the sun comes down, goes down, and it's dark, it's even Steven. Can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it's Southern senators, this is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And anytime you find the government involved in a conspiracy to violate the citizenship or the civil rights of a people, then you are wasting your time going to that government expecting redress. Instead, you have to take that government to the world court and accuse it of genocide and all of the other crimes that it is guilty of today. So those of us whose political and economic and social philosophy is black nationalism have become involved in the civil rights struggle. We have injected ourselves into the civil rights struggle, and we intend to expand it from the level of civil rights to the level of human rights. As long as you fight it on the level of civil rights, you're under Uncle Sam's jurisdiction. Right. You're going to his court expecting him to correct the problem. He created the problem. He's the criminal. You don't take your case to the criminal, you take your criminal to court. When the government of South Africa began to trample upon the human rights of the people of South Africa, they were taken to the UN. When the government of Portugal began to trample upon the rights of our brothers and sisters in Angola, it was taken before the UN. Why, even the white man took the Hungarian question to the UN, and just this week, Chief Justice Goldberg was crying over 3 million Jews in Russia about their human rights, charging Russia with violating the UN Charter because of its mistreatment of the human rights of Jews in Russia. Now you tell me, how can the plight of everybody on this earth reach the halls of the United Nations and you have 22 million Afro-Americans whose churches are being bombed, whose little girls are being murdered, whose leaders are being shot down in broad daylight? Now you tell me why the leaders of this struggle have never taken it before the United Nations. So our next move is to take the entire civil rights struggle problem into the United Nations. And let the world see that Uncle Sam is guilty of violating the human rights of 22 million Afro-Americans. And Phil has the audacity or the nerve to stand up and represent himself as the leader of the free world. Not only is he a
crook. He's a hypocrite. Here he is standing up in front of other people, Uncle Sam, with the blood of your and my mothers and fathers on his hands, with the blood dripping down his jaws like a bloody jawed wolf, and still got the nerve to point his finger at other countries. You can't even get civil rights legislation. And this man has got the nerve to stand up and talk about South Africa, or talk about Nazi Germany, or talk about Portugal. No, no more days like those. So I say in my conclusion, the only way we're going to solve it, we got to unite in unity and harmony. And black nationalism is the key. How are we going to overcome the tendency to be at each other's throats that always exists in our neighborhood? And the reason this tendency exists, the strategy of the white man has always been divide and conquer. He keeps us divided in order to conquer us. He tells you I'm for separation and you for integration and keep us fighting with each other. No, I'm not for separation and you're not for integration. What you and I are for is freedom.
Malcolm X, speaking in 1964 in Detroit, his ballot or bullet speech. Our website is www.democracynow.org. Malcolm X would have been 78 years old today. This latest news, Ari Fleischer, the White House spokesperson, has said he is resigning, will leave in July. If you'd like to get a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, Vilka Tsouris, and Noah Arrival. Special thanks to Sharif Abdel-Qaddous. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer with help from Rich Kim. Our email address, mail, M-A-I-L, at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for being with us. Something is holding me back.